Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jules Gill, it's Friday, it's the Untitled Banter podcast, the UBP, the day after the Summer Games Fest tried to blow us all away. Mixed reactions to the old SGF, but I want to see what you think. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill. I think I said that before, but you never know. How are you doing?
You're moving so quickly, man. You are gusting through this place. You are Hurricane
I'm a
Scott.
Gusty
You're
boy.
You are, man. You're a windy lad. but the thing is that I do agree with you in some respects. The Summer Game Fest, it tried to huff and puff and blow us all away, but it did get a bit wheezy at some
point.
And it
leaked 2 hours early.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot about it, which is like, it speaks of the greater sort of problem with online gaming expo-style stuff like this. It's like, a lot of stuff gets leaked early. It's hard to control the narrative when it's like already out there, and it's hard to be surprised when everyone in the audience is like, I've just seen this trailer actually like 10 minutes ago. But I was pleasantly surprised. I had low expectations going in, I won't lie, and I walked away going, there are a few titles here that I'm really looking forward to. However, not all of them were the AAA bangers. It was all mainly indie stuff that I was really into.
There was a whole bunch of tweets. Like I said, there was a mixed sort of fallout to the Summer Games Fest, where a lot of people were just saying, like, oh my God, the state of AAA gaming right now, where it's the thing that was heading the show was a remake of a game from 2013 that we don't really need a remake of. And then I was one of the people who, when I saw the screenshots that leaked beforehand, I was like, I can't even tell which is the remake and which is the new one. And I know that, like, if you really, certain shots, especially the clickers, they've been completely overdone. And I know that the character models for Joel and Ellie are the Last of Us 2 flashback models.
Yes,
so they are different. But when they revealed the footage of it, like that opening shot of Ellie looking out the window, you could have just told me that was 2013 and I would have believed you. Like, and even then, there is that sort of core thing of like, we're hanging, oh my God, a remake. Oh my God, a thing you already know. Like, we're not blowing people away with a brand new thing. But what's your thoughts on the Last of Us remake in general?
Well, so I was underwhelmed by this, I won't lie, because of the fact that I too am in the same situation where I'm thinking to myself, why do we need this game remastered? Especially when it probably would have made for a much greater sort of sense of, oh wow, this is something that we desperately need. Had it been the original running at 30 frames per second and now we finally got the liquid smooth 60 frames, like, but because of the fact that we'd already had the remastered version before for the PlayStation 4, it feels like, yes, this is just the HD texture pack that's just been added on top of it. And I am waiting to see how the gameplay elements have shifted, because they did say that they were tweaking a few elements of that. And true, if they can fix the often sort of clunky stealth sections and maybe refine a bit of the shooting mechanics that they had as well, or maybe just rebalance the AI so it was less prone to being flanked like straight away, then maybe we'll see that the gameplay is the reason to get this game over the incredible graphical update that many expect.
Because that's the whole thing, like, they were like, oh, we've got revamped combat. I don't think they've coined it as Last of Us 2 combat, but it's like overhauled or revamped or whatever. And I wonder what that's going to be, because Last of Us 2 came with like a jump button and the ability to go prone, which would kind of break a lot of the original game's levels.
True.
But at the same time, like, I assume they've done something meaningful with it. I just thought it was a weird way to show it off. Like, and also, like, there's this kind of thing, I don't know if you come down on the same side of this as me, but like, Last of Us always felt like a one-off. Like, back in 2013, it didn't feel like it needed a sequel at all. I was always surprised it was going to get a sequel. And then the sequel, for as like solid as it is, I can take or leave that entire story, to be honest. I like the original so much that I don't really need, I feel like it's done. Like, I like the empowerment that comes at the end of the original, if you want to believe Ellie and everything else. And so, like, now it's like this big franchise. So we've got this multiplayer thing coming, there's a TV show, and we're revamping the original within, like, it's only been, like, it's barely been in enough years kind of thing. And what do you think of that stuff? Because I'm like, I just don't feel like it needs it. It feels like a brilliant first installment that doesn't need this other stuff.
It feels like somebody's latched onto a great indie movie and has spun out this massive franchise just for the sake of doing it. It feels very Paranormal Activity in some areas because it's like a great concept that told a fantastic story. And there is no denying that anyone who's played that game didn't walk away just feeling like that was a brilliantly told story. And while I maybe disagree with you, and I do think that The Last of Us 2 sequel as a sequel is a very good game and deserves to be in the canon.
Totally in isolation, but yeah, it's phenomenal. I just didn't need it.
I will agree. It feels like a sort of extra scooping of ice cream on top of an already full tummy, as it were.
It's a weird thing as well, because obviously they're now calling this Last of Us Part 1. It's sort of recontextualizing the fact that bringing in sort of the general thematics of this has been Ellie's story all along, and you're kind of making it more about her. The way the trailer's cut is like, actually, by the end of this, if they do end up doing a Part 3, that Neil Druckmann's already sort of teased and said they do have a story outline for Part 3, then it would be like the Ellie trilogy. And I think that's quite interesting because it does minimize Joel overall. He's barely into anyway, and so that would be the kind of thing of like, by the time we're at the end of this, it might feel like a completely different story or saga as to where it how it used to feel in 2013. And so I'm kind of interested by that.
That is quite interesting how if they do try and reframe it as such, because Joel's impact on Part 1, as we're calling it now, is so significant because it's about him overcoming loss and grief and learning to love again effectively, which is strangely, when you put it on paper, the exact same storyline that God of War 2018 then sort of did better, let's face it, in many ways. I do feel like if they try and take that story away from him and give it to Ellie, then maybe we're missing the point of what made Last of Us so special in the first place. That's not to say that it isn't still Ellie's story, but it's just he is the focal point of that story.
Well, that was the thing. Yeah, Ellie was always a major part of the original, like one of the best written characters in entertainment or media history. It's interesting thinking back on or looking at the way they're remixing Part 1 and calling it Part 1 and with the new box art and then changing the way the trailer's kind of edited. And I like that. I don't mind the fact that it can be Ellie's trilogy. I just think it's an interesting talking point that Joel went from being like the guy everyone talks about in Last of Us 1 to being completely minimized in 2, and then now it's kind of potentially like the Ellie trilogy.
Now, I saw the internet sort of take this and apply their usual what's it called? A conspiracy theory style things. And they were saying that the reason why that they were going for this shift in focus is because then it means that when events, and obviously if you've not played The Last of Us Part 2, I won't spoil what happens, but to be fair, it's pretty much everywhere, all over the internet. When events happen in The Last of Us Part 2, that you don't feel as bad about it because you don't feel like it was his story to begin with.
Yeah.
And it's like, I do get that, but isn't that kind of like a PR backlash trying to minimize a fire by being like, oh no, don't worry, it was never about him anyway.
That's a hell of a save to sort of like do a weird recontextualization of the entire
trilogy. You're retconning your own story to avoid admitting that maybe you pissed a lot of people off. Like,
I mean, the thing is, like, the reality of the way that this remake came together is that they needed half of Naughty Dog to go do something while the main story team decide what they're going to do next. So like, that was the thing Neil Druckmann mentioned at the end of Games Fest, is that his next game is coming, but whatever that's going to be, while he worked that stuff out, and the rest of Naughty Dog went and remade Last of Us 1. So it's kind of like, I guess they're just doing whatever they can. But yeah, I think that stuff's just kind of fascinating. I never thought of Last of Us as a franchise when it first came out. I was like, this is the most immaculate one-off ever, and it's always been one of my favorite games. But I'm just, where we are now, it's this whole thing, and it's like this HBO show, and they showed that one screenshot of Pedro Pascal and the woman who I always forget her name of, who was in Game of Thrones. Yeah. And it's that kind of thing where I'm just like, now it's this whole media empire thing, and I'm just like, that's not what I thought it used to be.
And the worry is that will it ever stop? Probably not, because of the fact that it's like a license to print money now. So you've got to think to yourself, okay, so what are they going to do down the future? Once Ellie's story is told, do they then have to go back and tell another story? Do they go back and just start adding in loads of prequel event style things? And do they end up spoiling the original product by tying in so many sort of like cat's cradle twine all over this that you start pulling apart what made the original so special?
Well, they said the multiplayer is coming too. Like, the multiplayer is going to be its own standalone story with like that multiplayer
that
components.
Can absolutely do one for me. I have no interest in a multiplayer focused story of this, because we got the shoehorned one that came with like Tomb Raider, we got the Uncharted one, which admittedly they both had their pluses and cons, but this to me is just like, I I don't care.
Right.
I don't need to see this because it's very much a case of show, don't tell sort of thing. And I don't need to be told this story. Like,
I'm very curious what they do with it because initially, like, I quite like Last of Us Factions, like the original multiplayer mode. I like the fact that it brought in your social media feed and you were looking after like your actual friends and whatever. But gameplay wise, it was never like phenomenal. It was solid. It was like, I enjoyed it, but I'm curious what they do gameplay wise to try and mix it between feeling like a single player story and worthwhile characters and Naughty Dog panache, but then also do something multiplayer based that makes it work that way too.
But that's my worry, is that because you're focusing a game on multiplayer action, that means that you are losing a lot of nuance in any sort of character development, because no matter what happens, every single cutscene will end with a climb, begin with like a, oh, can't believe we just survived that one, to end with, oh my God, there's another shooting gallery coming. And it's just like, oh, that there is not the level of gameplay depth in a multiplayer focused game than would be in a single player one where you could experiment with different gameplay elements.
Plus,
I argue.
No, I totally get it. I think that's why I'm so curious how it feels to play, because it's like, I don't mind hybridized multiplayer, single player stuff like Sniper Elite or Dark Souls or whatever, like Invasion type stuff, but it just depends how it's done. But yeah, not to spend too long talking about the Summer Games Fest, because massive thank you to everybody for sending in their questions. Didn't even say that at the start of the podcast.
I know, right? We just launched straight into Last of Us.
Where we asked people for their thoughts and stuff, but we did get a lot of questions about the Summer Games Fest and what games we're most hyped for and stuff. Now, I'll tie this off by saying that the Callisto Protocol is by far the game I'm the most excited about for the rest of the year. I know that it's very Dead Space. Like, it is Dead Space 101. But I do love that Glenn Schofield, the original creative director of Dead Space, having left EA, has just gone, this is what Dead Space 3 should have been. This is what I was going to do.
And that is, I'm so gassed about that, because it's like, very rarely do you get directors able to just be like, look, I've actually got a budget now. I've got a platform now. Now I'm going to tell you the story that you should have. This is my Snyder Cut.
Like, yeah, kind of, yeah. And it's like, I was thinking, like, are they going to play it too safe? Because it's weird. We're coming out in a world, it's going to be coming out in a world where the Dead Space remake is going to be right next to it, or at least it's going to be talked about. And already there's people going like, oh my God, this looks a lot like Dead Space. And it's like, yeah, but it's allowed to be because it's by the dude. But at the same time, when you look at the powers that are in the new gameplay, it is just Dead Space so far. Minus there's like a melee system and you can dodge and stuff. And the gore seems next level, but I hope there's more to it. That was my thing. I was like, this just looks so solid. I'm getting like Shades of the Suffering from PS2. Oh,
I love like that series. That
dude,
it's so good.
Great. I got a Steam Deck this week. I don't know if I told you, but I got a Steam Deck this
week.
Yes,
you have. Yeah.
I've been telling everybody. And so I've been playing PS2 games. So I've been playing PsyOps, The Mindgate Conspiracy, and NBA Street, and whatever. Just all the good stuff. And The Suffering is brilliant. That game has such
so
good monster designs.
Game.
It was great. And so, like, yeah, I think maybe that's why it's on my mind. But there's something about Callisto that just feels so solid. What was your most hyped game from the show?
If we take Warhammer 40k Darktide out of that, because everyone's pretty much just going to be like, oh, Joel's going to talk about Darktide again. Yes, of course I am, because I'm incredibly hyped for it. There was that game that I found very intriguing, which was called, like, is it called White Noir or something like that, where it was the card-based shooting
Neon
platform. Neon Noir. I was there like, okay, this game looks like it's got a lot of potential to be just the right level of weird for me. And I also have already played a demo, I can say that now because the embargo's up, of the Metal Hellsinger
game. Yes, that thing's available now.
It's amazing. Okay. I won't like the soundtrack to it. I mean, you've got the likes of like Arch Enemy. You've got some...
Actually, Randy Blythe's done a song for it.
You've got like Trivium, Matt Heafy's
in it.
Is he
on it?
Well.
Okay.
I think so. I saw that his name was involved in it. And the fact that it plays exactly like BPM, but with like actual soundtrack music. And it does that thing that you and I have been touting is the best feature that is undersung in video games for ages, which is, remember in SSX3 and SSX Tricky, when we kept on saying that when you leave the ground for a big jump, all of the music dies out.
Yes.
And then when you land back, because if you land the trick, you get the extra thumping bit of the bass going to it. And it's like, this game does multipliers. So you've got like 8, 16, 32. And when you get to different levels, it will unlock the next bit of the track. As in, so you start off with just bass and drums, then it will go into the chugging riffs. And then if you get to the full 32 thing, the vocals will come screaming in. And you're just dashing around going like, ba 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 ba.
See, the thing is, like,
Yes!
I've never played PvP. I remember you absolutely loving it. I've tried Crypt of the Necrodancer. I tried the Hyrule spin-off to that one. And there was something else that I played as well that was like a rhythm-based action game. And I couldn't click with it. I always wanted to dodge. I wanted to fire outside the beat. And then I just broke everything. And I was like,
Was it you and I talking about a Groove Beat or Beat Groove or something like that?
It was something like that.
Like a war game, like a strategy war game that had War Groove. That's what it was called.
War Groove, yeah. But it was like stuff where I love the idea of it, especially with Metal Hellsinger. We actually had a question from Willie Arreia saying they tried the demo for it and absolutely loved it. And what were your thoughts? They would love to play it on PC, but they weren't sure if their laptop could run it. But it depends how intense it gets. But yeah, I think that this feels like a little burgeoning genre of like rhythm-based shooter stuff. Would you say this is one of the best versions of that so far, having come off BPM?
100%, because I was actually talking to a lovely fella by the name of Sean yesterday at a nice future training
shout
meeting.
Out to Sean.
Shout out to Sean from PC Gamer about what, because we were talking about what we reckon the next sort of subgenre of video games is going to be. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're going to move back into the rhythm action something genre, because I feel like with the likes of BPM, with Metal Hellsinger, with a few other titles that are experimenting with how rhythm can be used to influence platforming, shooting in this case, driving in another cases, or with like Thumper and like where it's like a remix of the Guitar Hero concept of moving down a track but making it feel like something completely different. I reckon that a lot of companies are going to start exploring in that, because Beat Saber proved to be the sort of next big jump where Guitar Hero and rhythm action games go. I feel like the next thing is going to be adding in like a super hot element to that, where it's a visual, like a fully immersive shooting rhythm action game. I feel like there's one on the cusp. I feel like Metal Hellsinger is moving us in the right direction, but it's going to be the immersive thing next.
Yeah, this feels like it's got like a certain amount of buzz around it that BPM didn't have, and Crypt of the Necrodancer was just a nice little indie game that people found. I have the soundtracks for all those games. I just can't play them very well because I'm always trying to play around the beat, but hopefully knowing the songs, I guess, for Hellsinger might help like stay on beat kind of thing. Let's actually do some questions though, because the Untitled B cast is based around them. So first question from Jack Asbury, who just says, I was wondering if you guys have been watching The Boys since it came back last week. Now, I don't know if you're a Boys fan, Jules, but The Boys is phenomenal on Amazon.
Now, I am a stupid idiot in the fact that I have only watched the first season.
Oh, it's so good.
I really want to get into it again, but it's just a case of finding the time. When I don't know about you, but sometimes when I finish work, I just want to put on something that isn't challenging. Like, I'll put the amount... I know that there's going to be a few people out there that criticize me for saying this. The amount of times that I've sat down and watched, like, Dinner Date with the missus, just because it's mindless drop, and we just love it.
I appreciate the mindless drag thing, although I've not gone that low necessarily, but I'd appreciate
it's a low bar.
I'll tell you what the Sonic Boom TV series on Netflix is legit brilliant. I'm just telling
you. They've got it on Netflix
only season one, but it's I think I said this on the main podcast. I feel like I've been talking about this for a while. Maybe me and James Dowse are reminiscing about it, but Sonic Boom is genuinely very, very well written and funny and very meta, and it knows how stupid Sonic is as a franchise.
Amazing.
And it's great. The episode with Robotnik and Shadow, and how Shadow's like Mr. Gruffman, and then Robotnik's like he's the coolest guy in the canon. It's like stuff like that is great, and that's my mindless thing, but I've burned through season one at this point. But yeah, The Boys is brilliant. Season three, very, very solid. Although I think it's being releasing in weeks, so I need to catch up on the latest one. But
I'll do my usual thing of just letting it all roll out and then just consume it. Like, I've been doing the same with Better Call Saul. I've just waited until this first batch of sevens come out, and now I'm just going to go boom, boom, boom.
Oh, you can do that now. Half of Better Call Saul is out.
I think we're on episode four now, so obviously no spoilers, but I am loving it.
Oh, for Better Call Saul? My god, you've got stuff coming. There's
oh
things.
I can't wait.
Next question from Kevin, who says, I know Mario Sports titles have been a little lackluster of late, but is there any hype for Mario Strikers amongst the UBP? Love the pod, perfect for walking the dogs. UBP massive. Aww. UBP to yourself and your dog. Jules Gill, you reviewed Mario Strikers. Give it 3.5 stars out of the old five. Now I bought it because I can't not buy everything, but I haven't played it yet. I've played the beta thing, so I can talk about it. But where are you coming down on it after playing a lot more than me?
So I was lucky enough to get a review code, and I tested out the online extensively. I blitzed through all of the single player content that was available on launch. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that there is a supremely polished sports title here. I have had an incredible amount of fun with it. However, it does feel like a few game design philosophies from the previous Mario Strikers games haven't actually been fulfilled. Right. They've, for example, the pitches are much smaller now. There seems to be absolutely no point whatsoever in choosing which side of the field that you actually want to be on, because you get a selection of, like, do you want it to look like a spooky mansion? Do you want it to look like Bowser's Castle? Whatever, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. But in other games, I think it was Mario Strikers Charged, which came out for the Wii or Wii U. I can't remember which one it was. It had hazards on the pitch. So if it were like exposed electrical wires, or sometimes something would happen, like a little volcano or a molehill or something like that.
Right.
But there's nothing like that. So the point of choosing your home field, as it were, is completely pointless at the moment. I wonder if they'll add that in down the line. Mm-hmm. You get less characters to choose from than the previous game, although each one of these guys do have different stats now that you can customize with the gear, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I do like that aspect.
How's the coin allocation? Because there's a big fear. We both share the idea or the fear that they are about to plug a microtransaction system into this. And by the time you hear this, maybe they have on the launch day. But at the same time, how do they dull stuff out without that?
So going through the single player mode, which is the cup battles, which are round robin elimination style matches that see you. If you win all your matches, you have 3 per cup, and they get progressively harder because the teams are focused on different things. Like, you'll have a cup that focuses on speed and passing, then another one that's on strength and tackling, blah, 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 blah. You get 400 coins for doing that, which is enough to customize one character fully, and there are 8 playable characters, and I think there's 6 cups. I can't remember off the top of my head. So you don't have enough to customize every character the way that you'd want it, and even then that only allows you to buy one item piece per arm, head slot, gloves, whatever.
It's kind of nuts that we're talking about this in a Nintendo game, like that they've finally given into that as well.
And do you want to know how many coins you get for taking part in a match and losing?
I'm going to shoot with 0.
Ooh, 2. 2 coins, 120 coins minimum to buy some things, right?
Okay.
So 2 coins for just taking part in a game, and you get 10 coins for winning.
Oh, see, I don't know.
But you are going to play a lot of games. Don't get me wrong.
It's
going to rack up quickly. And I'm sure that in the actual Strikers Cup mode, where you actually have, you build a team, and then you actually take them online with your friends, you do get probably a lot more rewards. And I assume that that's where the as a live service title is.
Because they have like a whole mode that wasn't available before launch, the Galactic mode or something. And it's like, we're going to see what the hell that thing is.
So once that gets updated and added in, because that wasn't available for review, I had no idea what that is. So my review actually isn't of the complete game, which is really weird, considering that it's going to be coming out soon.
It's always one of those things. I was thinking this yesterday, like, what if someone was getting into video games now? The amount of caveats you have to have for every single release of, like, you know, just, oh yeah, that's a bit broken, and yeah, they patch it in later. And actually what Nintendo do is sort of ghost sell you the season pass without you realizing, because they charge you up front and it'll be ready in about 6 months, but you just have to go with it.
But I will say, even though there's like a bare bones amount of content, like, unfortunately you can't even do handicap matches, in like, there used to be the thing before where it'd be like, oh, I want to have 2 players on my team and you have 4 players, and we'll just see how it goes. And there's no challenge mode, as in like each striker used to have like a set amount of goals. So it'd be like, score 10 goals within 3 minutes, or pass 50 times in the match, sort of thing. And you'd unlock little achievements for doing it. That's all gone. Now I wonder if that's going to be added back in.
Almost definitely.
At the moment, there is only the option to do a quick battle between you and the AI, or an online component, or a local multiplayer, the cup battles, the online mode. That is it. There are no other modes whatsoever.
And
the customization is low as well. Like, it's round limit time. Do you want it in night and day? Do you want hyperstrikes on or off? That's it. That's all you get.
No way.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hold up. This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, it's quite limited.
See, I don't know. Like I said, it almost feels like they need to be called out for it. Nintendo are sort of like shadow giving you, like I said, a season pass. Like Mario Golf had a bunch of content added to it after launch, but it wasn't advertised in that way. I think Mario Tennis Aces as well, like the tennis game, like took like a year for it to get fully equipped with enough characters, a whole bunch of different characters and like different customization options and everything. And I think that's what they're going to do with this. But rather than get all the flack in the media for, you know, Nintendo gives into microtransactions and season passes and fragmented releases, they're just doing it anyway. They're just sort of, here's the base version of the game for full price and we'll fill it in later.
And that's the interesting thing about it, is that if I'm sitting here and you were to press me on what I thought was wrong with the game itself, the gameplay, the moment-to-moment time that I have with the game, I would be incredibly challenged to do that.
That's like how they maybe skate around it, because the like, maybe game is great.
Yeah, it's quality. Like, yeah, they have produced a quality game. It's just, where's the rest of it?
Yeah.
Like it's you can't fault something that isn't there yet, because you don't know what it is that isn't there. So it's like, like if I was to just review it on how it made me feel and how much fun I'm having, it's nearly a 4 out of 5, 5 out of 5
right,
game.
Right.
But I have to look in the future as to what clearly is missing to be plugged in, like all the extra characters, the different modes, the new galactic mode, whatever we're going to be adding in. And once you start realizing that, you think, oh, I don't actually get that much for my money. And then it becomes a sort of 3 out of 5 game where you get the most out of it the more time you're going to put into it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They're still charging full price for it. It's £50 in the UK.
Yeah.
I managed to get it for £42 from Argos, I think. Shout out to Argos. But like at the same time, like they are charging a full price for a threadbare amount of content, or at least the bare minimum that they can quote-unquote get away with. And I think that's the thing that they're exploring. And the difference between them and like an Activision or an Ubisoft is that the core is polished, but that's it.
Yeah.
And then and because of that, everyone goes, well, what you are getting is great, and you're like, yeah, but it doesn't make up for the fact that I'm paying full price for like a third of a game or whatever it is. And we'll
very
see how
strange,
it goes,
isn't it?
Yeah, we got launch day today, as well as The Quarry, but I haven't bought that yet, but that's the follow-up ostensibly the spiritual sequel to Until Dawn. But that thing's going for £60, and I was like, I can't be dropping £110.
Wait, the Quarry is going for £60?
£65,
no,
sorry, yeah.
No way. Is that actually the going price?
I genuinely think that Supermassive, considering they did Until Dawn in 2015 and then they kind of just ate their own arse for like the next 7 years. Like the anthology series is fine. They had that terrible first person shooter VR game that no one bought.
Yeah.
I think now that they have a bit of buzz around The Quarry, and because they've cited Until Dawn in the marketing, there is like a lot of people looking forward to it. So like someone in their department, marketing department, whatever it is, some financial number cruncher has gone, let's try the £65 premium price point.
Because, I'm sorry, £65
for the
know it's gonna be
version anyway.
It's gonna be 2 hours, like maximum gameplay length. Because all of them are. Every single one of them, like, and Until Dawn is only what 3 hours long.
Like, no,
they marketed
like
it. I guess so. If you're going on the amount of protracted cutscenes that you have in there, but once
if you
know
don't
listen to
game
happen,
time, then
like actual game time of it, because man, that is a lot of money.
Well,
that
that's the thing. So the PS5 version,
I'm genuinely shocked by that.
I know.
I thought this was going to be like what you'd call now a budget price of 45 or 50 quid.
I think
but 65.
Like 65 whole pounds. I think it's 65 on PlayStation 5. It's 65 on Series X or Next Gen. And then the original versions, I think, are 50 or 55 on PS4, Xbox, whatever. So, but I think it's because the cast is insane for it. So they have to like bump that
yeah,
up.
Yeah, but
as well?
Like, how many times have I told you this? We shouldn't have to foot their no, bill of choosing which actors. That's like you pay, what is his name? The guy from, not iRobot. Yeah, it was iRobot, wasn't he? From Until Dawn.
What's
his name? Remy?
No, isn't
it? That's it. Yeah, Malik. Like, we shouldn't have to pay for your decision to hire him.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's a really good way to put it, yeah. But for me, it's more that it is the most buzz they've had around anything Supermassive in about 7 years, like since Until Dawn. Like, there was hype for that first Dark Pictures anthology game,
yeah.
But then that was really naff. And I love Until Dawn. I've got it as one of my favorite, best, you know, PlayStation 4 games of that whole generation. But yeah, I think they've just gone, we can crank this a bit and see what we can get away with. And I guess we'll see what they can get away with.
I feel like it's a case of, do you ever wonder why people are so defensive about their video games nowadays? When they're paying that much for them, of course, the sense of entitlement and attachment that comes from that, mm-hmm. the literal investment that you're putting into that, because let's crunch the numbers here. If you're working a per hour paid job mm-hmm. and you're on minimum wage and you have saved up for that, we are looking at a considerable amount of your life to buy that one game. Mm-hmm. And that game comes out, and let's face it, the reviews have been out for it already, and they've said it's okay, it's
fine. Oh, the
fine.
Quality's doing all right, like 8 to 9.
It's 8 out of 10 mm-hmm. game, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But for 65 quid, that's your game. Oh,
it's weird because like the other side of that is that whole sort of publisher whim of like, well, we need to pad it full of stuff. Go do this mission 20 times, like put this loot system in it, and then we can charge £65 and £70. And then it gets too elongated. I do think this price point is too high for this game, but it is hard sometimes to try and match those things up.
Speaking of padding, mate, I am so scared for that Street Fighter 6.
Really?
That adventure mode that they're shoehorning in. Please do not jump force this
you
game.
You must
I
have
do
played
not
Mortal Kombat
this.
Deception. What was the Mortal Kombat where you could run around as... what was he called? That one character. And it's just like that.
Yeah. Like, that wasn't... Yeah, but it was fine back on the PS2. But nowadays, when it still looks like the PS2, it's just like, oh, I don't need an open world fighting game.
No,
I don't need open world everything. Please, well, just give me some structure.
I assume that it's like you can walk to characters and talk to them, kind of like, because the thing is, having played quite a lot of like anime fighters like over the years, like Jump Force had it. There was another one that came out recently, and I forget, One Punch Man had it, where the main story is just like static NPCs, and you're just running up to them, talking to them, and then you fight in between. Yeah. Rather than design like a Mortal Kombat style cinematic adventure kind of thing, and I wonder if that's just what they're doing, because it seems to be like a trend that's caught on in like Eastern anime games, so as fighting games anyway.
It's just so that you can tag it by saying it's open world. World just sells because people assume that that gives it more quantity. Mm. That means that you've got more stuff. But what are you really doing? You're not doing anything. You're walking. You're going from one menu to another. There is nothing happening in between those points.
You're not wrong. The thing is, I do think the gameplay for this looks unreal.
Like, oh, yeah. Don't be wrong. The fighting for this game looks amazing. When he brought back Guile with his little beard, I was like, yeah.
Where did you come down on this? Is because two things now. Where did you come down on the bearded Ryu debate, and where did you come down on the large thighed Chun-Li debate?
I mean,
I'm very much pro both, to be honest.
The thing is that like the body proportions of every fighter in this game are ridiculous. So when it comes to like her thighs, it's just balanced out by the absolute meat. Like, I swear that Ryu is looking like Super Meat Boy now more than anything else. Like, he is just one big slab of ham with. That somebody has stuck bread rolls to for his abs. Like, that is how he's getting on. And a beard, whatever. Like, I'm not going to criticize somebody for having a beard. Especially because like, that is what my one gimmick.
Like, I like that the thing is that I never knew. I think part of me knew, but I haven't really thought about it in a long time, that Street Fighter does have a timeline. The Street Fighter 3 is the most recent one, and then this is finally taking place after that. So this is the newest one in the timeline. Mm-hmm. So this is like older Ryu with his beard and everything else. But like, I like that look. I think he looks cool. I like the whole like overinflated, over-the-top character models. I think it gives it more of a style, and I like all the inky like combat animation stuff when all the different connections are happening and stuff. So I came away from it thinking it looked really, really cool. I saw a bit of backlash, like, oh, it's a bit too comic booky, but like, for me, they should lean into that stuff. Like, Dragon Ball FighterZ was incredible for that, which had another one of those modes in that you didn't like, but like, that had the open world thingy again, or an open space.
If they don't like this art style, then they should just look at Street Fighter 4, because that is exactly the same inky-based art style that they introduced in that, and that was phenomenally well done. Mm-hmm. I feel like this, with the sort of like, I guess you'd call it a graffiti aesthetic, it fits the urban environment in which you're setting the game. So I actually think that tonally, aesthetically, this is very on brand. This
I think
is good.
It looks sweet. I think the main logo looks a bit naff, but like that
the weird rotated
thing.
Yeah, that's a bit odd.
But overall, like, in terms of considering how much of a weird bomb Street Fighter 5 was, like, and how weirdly segmented that thing's rollout was, this feels more confident.
You've just answered my question as to why they're putting in this open world story mode, because Street Fighter V didn't have a story mode when it launched. So they're literally doubling down as an apology and just saying, look, it's all story. There's nothing else. Story.
Escape. They need to do everything right this time around, because like 5 launched with like nothing. Like, I don't even think you could fight the AI one-on-one. It was like all you could have was
didn't have a training mode. Yeah, ridiculous.
Story, it was ridiculous. But like, yeah, Street Fighter should be one of the best franchises in gaming. Yeah. And this looks really cool. A quick question from a Dalumberjack who just says, have I listened to NecroGoblicon yet? I listened to Bones. I think it's Bones in the bowling alley.
Yes. When he accidentally throws the ball and it just smashes the old couple's head apart.
Yeah, I was just like, this is actually pretty brilliant. So yeah, I've listened to one song because after last week's or whatever it was that we talked about it, I went and checked that out. So yeah, they're great. I don't know how you even talk about NecroGoblicon on a podcast, because what reference point does anyone have for that? But it's a metal band. There's a little goblin in a bowling alley trying his best, and then he can't do it, and he throws a bowling ball and it takes out an old couple, and you should go watch it. Probably it's a thing.
I feel like NecroGoblicon is the band for everyone who's looking for a bit of banter in their death or speed metal. That's where you
they remind me of is it Ailstorm, and they remind me of like there's a Gwar as well, like the sort of
The bands that just like don't take themselves too seriously and love this sort of like dress up and fantasy aspect of it.
I kind of wish that the band themselves looked like all the goblins. Like if you had like a bunch of goblins with the hoods,
that would have
like,
been good.
Like
that
a band of Styxes, like the game Styx. I would take that. next question from Willie Arroyo, who says, what's better for the indie developer, to have their game on Game Pass so more people play it, or that the game gets talked about more so their digital sales increase? This is interesting because Xbox / Game Pass, they never talk about revenue. They always talk about discoverability. So it's like, I mean, ultimately you want to make enough money to keep your people paid properly, and then hopefully be able to make another game. So it's whatever leads to that. But yeah, what do you think?
So what I've heard from rumblings of indie game developers and sort of picked up on forums is that those that approach it with the Game Pass or streaming service in mind actually do so with microtransactions as their backbone because of the fact that it's kind of like Spotify, in the sense that they do get a rev share of whatever sales or downloads they get, but it is very minimal. So they see it more as like advertising the merch line of their t-shirts in order to actually make back the cost of development. Mm-hmm. So I would say that in that sense, Game Pass may actually be bad for the long-term growth of the industry, because it is going to homogenize the use of microtransactions in every title in order to stay afloat. And the worst thing is that if you release a game, it goes out on Game Pass, it's very successful, but it doesn't translate into direct sales, because people think that they can just always get it for, the monthly fee, then and they don't buy the microtransactions that you're putting out, that indie game developer then goes under.
They have a successful
game that fails.
That's a hell of a way of putting it. That's the thing, until Xbox fully talk about the revenue side of it, which they probably never will do. They might do as pressure gets put on them from the PlayStation Plus premium side of it, because Sony are about to do this exact same thing in a couple of weeks with their archive of titles, and we'll see what gets added to that in a monthly capacity as well. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I think the fact that I doubt that anyone finishes games on Game Pass. I did do a couple of Twitter polls on this, and people say that they do, but it was still like a two-thirds split. Like two-thirds would try and get through as many games as they can, one-third try more games than they complete. My gut just says that, like, I mean, maybe that's the people that are following me. I just think overall, in a mainstream audience, I think more people will try stuff than complete it. It's just my gut feeling on it. And I wonder how much, you know, whether they have some sort of how they pay people based on whether you get through the game, whether it's a retention thing or like, because there's so many games on Game Pass that like, if you start splitting that user base that much, I just don't know how that's a sustainable revenue model. And it's also timed as well. So I guess you're trying to encourage someone to play for a bit and then they want to pick up their save, and it's like, well, actually, you're gonna have to pay the money and pick something up. It was interesting with Forza Horizon 5, the last one, where it was on Game Pass, but they had a premium version of the game you could pre-order anyway. And then that did insane sales numbers, and then it was on Game Pass anyway. So they sort of double dipped. But like, I think it depends on the franchise itself. But yeah, we're very much in like an influx period with this stuff, while Sony try their hand at it. And I guess we'll see if Nintendo ever do their version of it over like in terms of third-party stuff. But yeah, I'd go with the latter. I think that individual game sales are just going to give you more money than a monthly revenue tick, but I don't know what that monthly revenue tick is.
Yeah, it's hard to say without the actual data.
Yeah, I can only imagine it's minuscule because of the amount of titles on there, but you have to wait and see. Next title, I was going to say next question, from Roy Mutombo Turner, who says, what would you think if Nintendo built a Switch successor with additional horsepower in the dock, meaning higher spec games could be played, but only while docked? That's like an interesting way to split it.
I actually wouldn't be adverse to that because even though I only docked my Switch for the first time the other day when I went over to play a game of Mario Kart over at my mate's house, and I was just like, oh yeah, it does actually like go on the big TV, not just in my hand. Because
that's what Josh does, he never plays it on the TV.
Yeah, because the Switch has just become that game console that I'll have, like I'll just play on the couch for a bit, I'll do that, and I love the fact that I can do that. Mm-hmm. Would I be annoyed if I had to dock it to play some games? Probably not, because of the fact that it would be a case of I still have the functionality of the other games on that library, but docking it, providing the extra boost and oomph, yeah, that could be great. My problem would be is that if you open the floodgates, why would anyone make anything that isn't making the most of that console, because you are upping the competition?
Yeah, I guess it's hard because it's like, what kind of features could you code in that would be activated when you dock the system that wouldn't get in the way of how, like, their selling point that it's immediately on the big TV? I would assume, I mean, they kind of do that now. If you look at, like, most games have different specs on handheld versus dock, but it's usually just frame rate stuff.
Yeah.
Because it can free that stuff up. But yeah, I like the idea of that as a way to split the difference, let's say, but I would rather just have a handheld 4K Switch or a handheld Meteor Switch, because the Steam Deck can do Elden Ring, can do God of War or whatever, so it's kind of throwing the bar down anyway.
It proves that it is possible. Yeah. And like, I was actually looking at the Steam Deck stuff, just seeing what the performance was, and somebody was playing Elden Ring on it, and I was like, okay, this is genuinely
impressive.
Insane.
Like, I mean, it's a lot of money.
What's the battery life though on it?
Well, that's the thing, it depends what you're playing. I've been playing a lot of PS2 stuff, so I can get about 4 or 5 hours out of it if I'm playing a bunch of PS2 games.
That's actually pretty impressive.
It's not too bad. It depends on the games, but I'm also, I mean, that's the thing, on the first night when I got it, I was installing all of the different emulation software and I was looking all those different things up, and you can use it just as a PC, so I was in desktop mode and downloading files and drag dropping loads of different things, but so I was doing that stuff, and then I noticed that it had gone down by about 70% after maybe 2 or 3 hours of pure setup, but that was a lot of download time, a lot of unpacking stuff, so it depends what you're running. I don't own anything on Steam that's a AAA game, because I've always been a console gamer. So like things like Elden Ring or God of War, like I have them on console, so I might take the plunge and get something on Steam Deck just to see what it does, but my gut says that it'll burn it in like an hour or 2 hours. I imagine you can't play Elden Ring for very long, especially on decent settings anyway, but I was always getting it as an emulation machine, so I'm like,
yeah, fair enough,
you know, make it a mini PS2 or whatever. But anyway, next question from McAllister NYC. Given the rumors around Apple maybe buying the dreadnought of disappointment that is EA, do you think that that would be a good fit? Would Disney or Amazon be better? This is a whole rumor that's doing the rounds in the industry that EA have said they were up, or they was entertaining the idea of investors, and it was something like Apple had stepped forward or registered interest that they might want to take them over.
What's it? So Apple would want to buy EA or become like a significant shareholder in it? Yeah. Like, okay, that's an interesting thing, because if you removed all of EA's titles and put them onto Mac gaming things, a system that is notoriously bad for running video games, that would be hilarious. You've got half working games working on half working laptops.
EA,
like,
as well,
good ones,
are in the worst position of their recent history. Like, they've just lost the FIFA license, which I get, they pulled away from quite a bad deal there anyway, and they're going to relaunch as
I toot my own horn here. Cut to about a year and a half ago, or 2 years ago, I was banging on about this, saying that the costs were becoming so prohibitive to EA to hold on to that license. Mm-hmm. And I said this was going to be the collapse of the FIFA. No one listened to me. Everyone said it was too big to fail. Everyone said that is ridiculous, because why would anyone want to leave that franchise or leave that license on the table? And I just said, because it gets to a point where even if you are making money hand over fist, you are not making money at all, because you are spending hundreds of millions of pounds to get the license in the first place. It created the predatory loot box system that we see so prevalent today. Mm-hmm. It created this horrible Ultimate Team franchise thing that will not go away, even though everyone, bar the whales that are at the very top, agrees is bad. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that it's, like, all those features will only carry over as well. I mean, like, the deal that they got out of was this insane amount of money that FIFA were asking for. Mm-hmm. But apparently EA's already secured a bunch of, like, separate deals to just be able to do their EA Sports FC thing and carry all that stuff over. And I think they already confirmed that Ultimate Team is one of the things that's carrying over. So the money grubby side of it, I guess they'll only profit more. Less of it will go to FIFA, but the actual, like, systems will stay in place. But overall, like, EA, the state of FIFA, the state of their football stuff, the state of Battlefield is, like, horrendous.
Bad. Aren't they actually, like, winding it down? Talking about it, and he was just saying, like, look, this is such a disaster, they're thinking of pulling the plug already.
Yeah, so Jeff Grubb from GameSpeed / Giant Bomb said that it's down to a skeleton crew.
Shout out to Giant Bomb, by the way.
Yeah, massive shout out to Giant Bomb. Yeah. Lifelong fan. Like, I was like, I was gobsmacked when the next Lander stuff happened, and then when Jeff's gonna be leaving. That is an end of an era. Like, I've followed them since high school. But that whole thing was Jeff Grubb saying that it's down to a skeleton crew and they are just fulfilling their barest legal obligations for the advertised features or the advertised season stuff. But season one, quote unquote, just started like last week and all you got was two new weapons, one new character, one new map or something. So yeah, there's all that stuff. EA did respond to that saying that it wasn't true. But it's been multiple sources have said that it is true. So I guess we'll see how it goes. Plus, it's EA. I don't think they're in a great position. I don't think Apple would save them. I don't think any of these people were Disney or Amazon. I think they would only double down on the investor stuff, the shareholder stuff. Yeah. So I think they would only get worse if they did it. But yes, not to worry, because we've always got the Entitled Banter podcast, which is what this has been. The UBP. So I've been Scott Talbot, joined by Jules Gill. A massive thank you for sending in all your questions. Mr. Jules, you were going to say something there.
I was just going to say, next week, make sure to check out on the Thursday when we put the tweet going live to ask you guys for your questions. Thank you all so much for submitting them. And as per usual, even though we only got through a handful and spent the first 10-15 minutes talking about The Last of Us, which nobody asked us about, we do try our best to get through as many as possible.
We do. I'll carry as many over to next week as I can get my hands on. There's a whole bunch in previous weeks. There's always a lovely UBP bucket to go back to. But yeah, massive thank you to everybody, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.